is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Jeff McCausland, CBS News. Colonel Jeff McCausland, the United States Army, retired to help me understand the latest headlines from Afghanistan, because in this confusing environment, there are many hands, many capitals involved. Dateline Kabul within these last hours. At least three rockets hit near the presidential palace on Tuesday. That would be 24 hours past. Shortly before Afghan President Ashraf Ghani was to give an address to mark the major Muslim holiday of Eid al-Adha. There were no injuries and the rockets landed outside the heavily fortified palace grounds. The Islamic State group claimed responsibility. That's ISIS. What is most significant to me is that this barrage took place just after the arrival of the foreign minister, Abdullah Abdullah, back from talks with the Taliban about peace. Colonel, a very good evening to you. The confusion is the fog of war. ISIS claims responsibility. Some could doubt that and say it was the Taliban with a warning sign just after peace talks. However, the larger story is we can't be clear, and I note that the whole region is now focused on the fact that Afghanistan is passing into unclear territory, the undiscovered country of the future. What do you make of this rocket attack, if it is ISIS or if it is Taliban pretending to be ISIS? Good evening to you.
John, good evening to you. Well, on the one hand, we have seen ISIS conduct independent attacks in Afghanistan in the past. And frankly, we've also seen ISIS actually fighting with the Taliban. So at times there's been no love lost between these particular groups. They have focused their attention largely on the Shiite community, the ISIS, most notably the Hazara group, and done some horrific attack, including high school girls and the like, in the last few months. Them making this attack is not surprising. In some ways, they seem to have a vested interest in destabilizing the situation as much as possible, in some perhaps belief that from that chaos, they will emerge as being the number one terrorist group in charge. So they might be doing this independently of any kind of cooperation with the Taliban. On the other hand, some might argue, well, this is very convenient for the Taliban to have at least some tacit acknowledgement or agreement with the ISIS for them to conduct such an attack, to further destabilize the situation, undermine the credibility, if there is any, for the Afghan government in the eyes of the population. They can't even protect the presidential palace, which causes a continued downward spiral in that credibility and contributes then to the deteriorating security situation we've seen throughout the country.
Geography, Jeff, you've been there. I have not. I've only seen maps. Kabul is a city of 3 or 4 million people. It is in a bowl shape with mountains around. Is it credible that the Taliban or the ISIS could launch rocket attacks, long-range rocket attacks from surrounding Kabul and escape, similar to how the other guerrilla groups, I'm thinking of Viet Cong during the offensive in 1968, launched rocket attacks against Saigon to disturb, to disrupt every possible governance? Is that credible with the geography of Kabul?
Yeah, I think it is, John. In fact, I was in Kabul and was involved in a rocket attack one night. Now, there was just a random one rocket, as we saw here yesterday, the random sort of three rockets. It was not exactly a sustained barrage of artillery and rocket fire, but the geography does encourage that. Though this is, again, a fast city of now about 4 to 4.5 million people, much larger than it was back in 2001 when we arrived and invaded Afghanistan, when it was only about 1 million people. So the size and expanse is huge. The dense nature of the population also would suggest that if it was subjected to large-scale rocket and artillery fire from the surrounding mountainsides, which is certainly possible as they get closer and gain more weaponry, that you would see massive civilian casualties potentially, or at a minimum, continued massive refugee flows as people left the capital, if in fact it was besieged in that fashion.
The capital is now involved beside Washington. Moscow is worried about the Taliban into the stands. Beijing looks to have be sending a representative in some fashion. Pakistan, of course, is intimately involved in cross-border terrorism. Delhi has warned again and again, not just what will happen if the Taliban take charge, but the return of Al-Qaeda. Iran is not in any way secure from the Taliban reaching into its territory, especially along the border where the Persians do not dominate. The ethnic minorities of the north of Afghanistan are cross border in Iran. So of these capitals getting involved, which one are you going to watch closest, Jeff?
I'll watch Islamabad the closest, because there's no doubt that Pakistan has the greatest influence on the outcome in Afghanistan for the support they have given to the Taliban throughout the years. I think people need to remember on just one number, and that number is 2.7 million. That is the estimated number of refugees internally and externally from Afghanistan so far in the fighting over these last 20 years. We're seeing that number grow. And the two countries that will be most affected in terms of refugees will be Pakistan, where there already are well over a million refugees, and the second one being Iran. But as far as the Russians, Indians, and others, they're far from immune. Russians very concerned. This could destabilize the region, where they have great interest in places like Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan. And it's not surprising that in the last few days we've learned that the Russians have deployed tanks near the Afghan border with Tajikistan in preparation for military drills they have announced, which will include their forces, Tajikistan forces, as well as Uzbekistan forces. And finally, of course, Iran, a Shiite country, Afghanistan being largely Sunni, though a large ethnic group, the Hazaras, are in fact Shiite. And we've had reports of Taliban leaders complaining about militia groups being organized and recruited by the Iranian Quds Force crossing the border from Iran into Afghanistan to fight against the Taliban. When the Taliban were in charge over 20 years ago, there was incidents along that border that almost resulted in a war between Iran and the Taliban back there 20, 25 years ago.
My reading of this, Jeff, you're the professional, is that the Kabul government has sufficient military force and air and power, offensive power, to hold on to Kabul for some time, perhaps hold on to major provincial cities. So are we looking at a period of doubt about Afghanistan? In other words, it won't be Saigon with the Taliban parading through the streets raising their automatic weapons, but it'll be a long, drawn-out civil war. Is that credible, Jeff?
I think it's very credible, John. I think what we've seen is this rapid expanse of the Taliban over the last 8 weeks, where they triple control of districts. These have been largely, if not exclusively, rural areas. Now, at this moment, of course, they do, in fact, threaten 16 of Afghanistan's 34 provincial capitals. But it's much more different to fight your way through a more densely populated urban area. And that's where some of the advantages of defense, Afghan security forces, can be brought to bear in terms of firepower. There still is a fledgling Afghan air force, as long as they can keep that aloft, that could bring down bombing attacks on advancing Taliban. And then, of course, the major prize, Kabul, as we said a moment ago, this huge city of now 4.5 million. You know, the Russians were able to sustain the government of Najibullah after they departed for several years. It was dependent upon continued supplies and continued security assistance from Moscow. And they flew in, some estimate, 4,000 airplane loads of weaponry and other supplies. So whether or not the United States continues the support that we have promised will, in fact, be critical. But so far, the United States has said we will continue to provide up to $3 billion in annual military assistance to the Afghan security forces, pay, training, weaponry, and the like, as well as $500 million in humanitarian assistance. In all that, of course, one of the critical factors will be that we're able to maintain and secure the Kabul International Airport, because that'll be the major hub for the influx of that additional support.
We have a minute, Jeff. Does Moscow have a motive to supply the Kabul government to sustain it, because it's a buffer to the Taliban into the stands?
To some degree, I think that is likely to be quite true. They certainly do not want to see Afghanistan sink into absolute chaos of civil war, because once again, it could affect the entire region. Even the Chinese, who many say, well, have an enormous economic interest in Afghanistan in the future, and they might well have that. But at the same time, don't forget the Chinese are very concerned about their Uyghur population in western China, which again is Muslim, and they would be more and more concerned that radicalization of Islam and radical Islamic movements could affect that Uyghur population even more, make them more restive, and a greater security threat to Beijing.
Three rockets landing around the fortified compound of the palace in Kabul. ISIS claims credit. The Taliban peace talks with the Kabul government continue, whatever that means. Jeff McCausland, CBS News, U.S. Army retired. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.